You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My name is Alex Felice, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast.
The thread couldn't be more clear. It read verbatim. I've seen four posts this morning saying that if you want to improve your life, you have to give up sugar, alcohol, and similar things. Well, this is probably a good idea. Sugar isn't your problem. What changes lives is radical responsibility, huge goals to shoot for, and a monster intensity that lasts 10 years. There are millions of successful people who eat sugar and millions of people who eat clean but go nowhere in life. Don't let people sell you cheap solutions. Well, today we talk hustle culture, clean eating, and a slew of other controversial topics with resident rabble-rouser and my good friend, Alex Scott Felice. Alex Scott Felice is the creative director for Brandon Turner's new podcast, A Better Life. He loves cameras and people, and according to his Threads bio, deadlifts solve all problems. He also says shit talk is his love language. Alex Scott Felice, welcome back to Earn and Invest. Let's start with deadlifts. Come on now. Haven't you ever like hurt yourself doing this? That's a lot of weight to lift up off your body, even over your head, right?
I actually hurt myself just the other day. Yeah, I hurt myself a lot.
Shoot, I didn't know that it was so recent.
Yeah, I'm coming up on, actually, I turned 40 yesterday. So my days of deadlifting 400 pounds is starting to take its toll. But I think that's part of the point, right? If you're not getting hurt, you know, are you really trying?
I've got a decade on you. And so I'm trying not to get hurt nearly as much because I found every 10 years or so I get hurt more often. To be a little bit more serious, we're going to have a little bit of a controversial conversation. And you do say in your bio that shit talk is your love language. For people who don't know you, you kind of like to stir things up a little, huh?
Yeah, I find it a little bit of fun to stir the pot a little bit. I come from a place where I know in my heart that I mean well. I love people. I want people to get better. I am of the opinion that, you know, the only way I know how to love people is tough love. And so I find that, you know, a little harsh language along the way in life is just fun theatrics. You know, life is hard and you got to be tough to really do well at it. And if you can't handle a little, you know, abrasive language, then, you know, I think you're going to have a harder time. So I start with a little bit of a pinprick to get people going. Let's say it that way.
You mentioned that life is hard. And before we get to the bulk of this conversation, let's talk about how I know you. Both you and I met each other at FinCon, which is pretty much a creators conference for social media, et cetera. And both of us are interested in personal finance. You're actually part of the real estate world. Tell me a little bit about how you got interested in real estate and eventually hooked up with Brandon Turner.
Got into real estate in 2014 during the foreclosure boom. It was the first time I really started learning investing. I knew that I didn't want to 401k or stock market my way into financial freedom. I needed cash flow. And I had no money. I didn't really want to start a business. And I needed something that was, I'm a low risk sort of fella. So I was like, well, what solves all those boxes? And it was cash flowing rental real estate. Set it and forget it. It was a little more controlled than the stock market. And again, cash flow rather than just equity. And I like the idea of just like, hey, that thing's in a cash flow and I get to keep the asset. I don't have to worry about, you know, dividends changing or having to sell off equities to make my returns. And it turned out that in 2014, you could go on the MLS where I lived in a small little town in North Carolina and buy houses for $30,000 a pop. And so I bought you know, a lot of those, not as many as I should in retrospect, but I bought enough of those to sort of guarantee my financial future. Now they all quadrupled in value. And so along the way, I got into cameras, found a sort of a surprising love of creativity and cameras. And I merged my real estate network and my real estate life with telling stories on camera. And in 2018, I was on the Bigger Pockets podcast. In 2019, I met Brandon Turner at an event, took a couple of photos for him, became the photographer for Bigger Pockets. You know, didn't really stay in touch with Brandon, but here and there, you know, we were acquaintances. And then when he had a need for a full-time storyteller, full-time production guy, I was the obvious choice.
This is one of those interesting stories about passion. A lot of us get into personal finance or real estate or whatever we get into because we don't really love this idea of working for someone else. And I know specifically you were your own boss, right? You were creating cash flow, buying real estate. How did it feel like to go back and start working for someone?
Yeah, good question. Not that bad. I think it's important. You know, financial freedom is like this idea that people go like, I got to quit this job. I hate this job. I don't like working. And it's like, yeah, maybe. I think most people have to do something. And it's just important to find something that you like working on. And I came out here and I was like, look, I want to bring cinema quality production to podcasting. And so he's like, well, okay, you just do that and then we'll be happy. So, you know, working, you know, being an employee, I'm like, you can call it whatever you want, right? You can call it whatever you want. The framework that we created allowed me to do what I wanted to do and allowed Brandon to get what he wanted to get.
So I want to get back to that thread because I believe it ties into your past a little bit and even into our community, this idea of freeing yourself from the 9-to-5 and freeing yourself from employment, at least you don't want, ties in very much to this idea of hustle culture. And this was kind of one of those things I thought about when I read that thread. I'm going to reread the thread in a minute, but first and foremost, tell me about this idea of hustle and even hustle culture, the way you interpret it. Is that a bad or good thing? Because I've heard people talk about hustle in both really positive ways, but there's also been a blowback where people talk about it as being maybe a negative thing.
Yeah, look, hustle culture, there's a lot of people in the world that have high work ethic and they want to go, you know, create their life, and they should. And but there's also like a lot of marketing that goes along with hustle culture that is, you know, it sort of steers people into things that they're just not built for. Like most people are not hyper entrepreneurs, right? That's a small percentage of people. Mm-hmm. Most people would do very well with creating enough financial freedom for themselves so that they can breathe and then go find out what they're really designed to do in the world. And like I said, the percentage of people of that that's going to be like hyper entrepreneurs is going to be small, maybe 5%. In the end of the day, like money is empty. Money provides no intrinsic spiritual value. You can't take it with you, right? It's a different form of alcoholism, right? There's nothing at the bottom of the bottle. So it's like hustle culture is good. It's a tool like any other. It's good when it's used correctly, and it's bad when it's used incorrectly. You know, like a hammer can build a house and it can be a murder weapon. It's not the hammer's fault. And so hustle culture, like most things, has its good and its bad.
So I want to reread the thread and then I'm going to ask a few questions about it. So let's go back to the original thread that you posted that gave me the inspiration for this podcast episode. And I'm quoting here. I've seen 4 posts this morning saying that if you want to improve your life, you have to give up sugar, alcohol, and similar things. Well, this is probably a good idea. Sugar isn't your problem. What changes lives is radical responsibility, huge goals to shoot for, and a monster intensity that lasts 10 years. There are millions of successful people who eat sugar and millions of people who eat clean but go nowhere in life. Don't let people sell you cheap solutions. Talk about the morning that you wrote that. Do you remember what spurred you specifically to write that thread?
Yeah, exactly that. I saw a bunch of, you know, influencers, right, with big followings, and they're like, I went 7 days without alcohol. I went 30 days without alcohol. You should too. Give up this alcohol. And they're selling in these big fancy packages, like it's the cure to people's problems. And like, look, I mean, alcohol is not probably that good, and maybe even in any doses. Although I won't give alcohol that bad of a rep. It's not that bad, right? It's widely used, and for millennia, And sugar's the same way, right? Is it good for you? No. But like, I think this idea that people can, I think what people like to do is they like to do these superficial, it's marketing. They like to do these superficial fixes, right? It's sort of like looking like I'm solving the problem without actually solving any problems. It's the business owner who likes to play business owner. So they go off and they buy an LLC and they get a website and they get business cards and they have no revenue. It's like, it's all the superficial, easy things to do that don't matter. And so you're like, I'm going to give up sugar. And I'm like, sure. I mean, that's good. If you're widely overweight and like, you know, you need to get a clean diet, right? But then again, it's not just the sugar. I mean, that's one piece of it. And so I look at a lot of people on the internet and they sell these, you know, very oversimplified solutions to difficult problems. And if you want to turn your life around, you know, ice baths in the morning is not going to make the big difference. Now, I'm not saying there's not a place for these things. And I'm not saying that like maybe there's a one piece of the puzzle or maybe somebody that does cut out sugar and alcohol and do ice baths, you know, starts themselves on a journey that is larger than the components involved. But the internet is not a place of nuance. The internet is a place of keywords, you know, sound bites. And so if the internet is going to be a place of sound bites, then I want to get my share. And so when everybody sells you like a really, you know, easy solution, I'm going to sell you some tough love in a very sort of hostile, equal package, right? An equally punchy package, but the reverse. That's just what I'm doing the same thing they're doing. I'm just trying to add some the opposite perspective.
I don't know if you meant to or not, but it actually, the thread draws kind of a stark contrast. This idea of getting rid of bad things in your life. And I think you've added in like doing some kind of useless rituals versus adding in the things you truly want. Do you think that sometimes we go for the low hanging fruit by trying to get rid of some of these things we think that are bringing us down as opposed to maybe going out and doing that difficult thing that you want in life?
Of course, nobody wants to do hard. Nobody wants to do hard. I mean, it's just, what's the old saying? What's easy to do is easy not to do. It kind of makes me think of this like, oh, I can get rid of sugar. It's like, yeah, you can get rid of sugar. Yeah, I mean, do it. Go for it. Congrats. You are now somebody who got rid of sugar. Now, like, are you somebody like, is that your goal in life? You know, is your goal in life to drink more water? Is this the big pinnacle? Is this the big mountain you're going to climb?
You know, the water shit drives me crazy because, you know, I'm a physician, right? And there's really no good data on this whole water thing. So that whole thing of like, I'm drinking 3 liters a day or whatever number that people put out there, that drives me nuts. Because not only do I don't think it's going to actually make any difference in your life, but there's actually no scientific data that shows that this is beneficial in any way, shape, or form.
It's cosplaying hustle culture, right? It's the same thing. It's like, it's the look at me. I did this thing that looks like success. It's the ice baths. Do ice baths work? And they go off and they get this data and they go down to the granular and you're like, yeah, it helps your, you know, whatever your performance or your cognition or your whatever by 2%, by 5%, by 10%. I'm like, this is not how the world works. This is not a night and day difference. This is not going to compound into really anything. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't do ice baths. My guess is it's more like, do you want to become a person who, you know, goes to the gym, drinks water, doesn't drink alcohol, doesn't eat sugar, does their ice baths every day, saves their money, has good investments, work harder at their business. You become this comprehensive person that succeeds, and maybe these pieces can be components of it. But what people do is they do ice baths for 3 weeks. They post it on the internet so they can get their clout, so they can get their little. It's a drug addiction like many others, right? It just looks a little bit different. It looks like productivity. And so I'm just personally unimpressed. And so, again, it comes back to what I said before. It's like, if you're going to just put out some like super simple, you know, soundbite or marketing piece to make yourself look better, well, then I'm going to put out some, you know, aggressive soundbite or marketing piece to show like the other side, the perspective, and make myself look better. Like, you know, I'm just not, I think the internet deserves more nuance. And if I have to do it by, you know, counterpunching, then that's the way I'm going to do it.
So let's talk about some of those counterpunches. One of the things you first call for is radical responsibility. You know, that sounds great, but what the heck does that really mean?
I'm going to go deep on you.
Okay, please do.
In the Christian faith, the Christian faith is separated from Judaism mostly by the crucifixion of Christ, the passion. And so what do? They take Jesus. They unfairly arrest him. They beat him to an absolute pulp. They put a cross on his back, right? A symbol of responsibility. Unfair responsibility. And they kick his ass all the way up the hill, and then they stick him to it. That is radical responsibility. That is what it symbolizes. The responsibility of, you know, of all man's failings. Another one I'll go with you is I just got done reading The Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. Beautiful book about how every man is responsible for all man's failings. And it's a sort of an interesting concept. And so radical responsibility, now those are big, big, big concepts. But on a day-to-day basis, you can start with everything that's wrong in your life is most likely your fault. And so if you're out of shape and you want to fix it, then like, yeah, you're the one eating the sugar. So you can probably cut that to help. But also you're probably eating too many calories overall. So you're going to cut more than that. If you don't have the money situation you want, it's not the fault of the capitalist. It's probably your fault. If your credit score sucks, it's definitely your fault, right? If your relationships aren't healthy, like half of 50% of the relationship is you. So it's half your fault. And you chose most of those relationships. Radical responsibility comes from like, if you want your life to be a certain way, the only person who's going to be able to fix it is you. And the only person who got you to the place you're at is you. And so it's easy to say these things, but it's when you internally really deeply believe them, that you can start to say like, well, because the opposite of that is true. When you start to get there and you're like, yeah, my relationships suck because they're my fault. It's like, well, but if my relationships are going to be good, that's going to be my fault too. So let me get my stuff together. And so radical responsibility is hard, and it's a very easy sort of thing to talk about. It is harder to enact. And I recognize that, but it's also, again, it's not the simple cutting out of the sugar tasks that radically, that change our life, that are meaningful, that are impactful. It's the difficult mountains that you climb that really make a difference. And so most people don't want to climb difficult mountains. They don't do it. They just, you know, they do an ice bath and then they're like, look at me, look how successful I am, because they care more about, the cosplay. They care more about what looks like success rather than what they feel.
So let's assume that deep down inside, people do want some real change, right? And so maybe they do the ice bath, maybe they cut out the sugar. They're putting in some effort, but maybe some of the easy effort and maybe some of the misplaced effort. If I'm hearing you and you're saying, boy, radical responsibility, and like you said, it's something easy to say, how do we actually practice that? Like maybe in your life or in how you've seen other people practice radical responsibility, what are those habits that help us do this? Because I think it's easy for us to say, okay, well, if I'm successful or not, it's all on me. But that's a mindset thing. But then I have to actually act it out.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, you know, to be contrarian to my original position, if you are somebody who wants to take radical responsibility, you want to cut out sugar, you want to cut out, or, you know, do your ice alcohol, bath, cut out sugar, cut out alcohol. Yeah. Do it for good. That would be responsibility. Do it for good. Never eat sugar again. And then you'll be somebody who practices radical responsibility. You go to the internet, you say, I cut out sugar, and then never, ever, 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 ever eat it again. Right. That will change your life, because that isn't just the sugar. Now you're a person who commits. And so radical responsibility is goal setting plus commitment. I mean, that's part of it. I wouldn't say that's the definition, but it's like, go set a, like, I'm going to go climb Kilimanjaro January 2025. We have it planned. It's like, I'm going to do it. And so people are like, how'd you do it? It's like, first I set the goal, then I committed to the goal. It's done, right? I'm going to save 20% of my income no matter what, before I even pay a bill. I'm going to do that. You want radical responsibility? Save 20% of your income first, and then do that forever. And that will get you, you know, that's the path. So it's goal setting plus commitment, unwavering commitment for a long time. If you want to build a business that makes money, do it. Do find the idea, commit to it, and do it for 10 years. Do it every single day. Work on it every single day. If you want to be a world-class podcaster like Doc G, right? Commit to it. Set the goal. Commit to it and do it every day for 10 years. You will get good. You won't get good by saying, like, I'm going to do 10 episodes on the internet and then doing 8. Nobody's going to be that impressed. What they'll be impressed by is when they say, hey, I'm going to start a new podcast. And like, yeah, yeah, yeah. You and everybody else has a podcast. I don't care. And then you show up back, you know, in episode 50 or episode 500, 10 years later. And they're like, what the heck? How did you do that? Radical responsibility.
So radical responsibility is this idea of goal setting plus commitment. But I notice in this thread and what I also see on social media, this idea of no sugar, no alcohol, or the ice baths or whatever it is they're kind of superfluous goals, right? Like a big part of, I think what you're criticizing here is maybe even if we are going to be committed, we're committing to the wrong thing.
Yeah. We're cosplaying success again. So one of my first, I have a list of values that I've been trying to work on. Like what is most important to Alex? And you know, number two is pursue radical responsibility. And number three or four is do what's hardest. Right. And so this culture, our American culture, I mean, I love America. I don't want to dog America, but like we are very immature and we celebrate too easy and our goals are too shallow. And yeah, it's a big problem. So I think, you know, who's good on this is it like Jordan Peterson? It's like set the highest possible goal you can think of and then do nothing else except try to reach it. And so it's just not a bad way to go. I think we've all convinced ourselves that the norm is sort of easy. And life in America is very easy, right? We're wildly rich. Our quality of life is sick. I mean, it's easy to be easy, right? It's common to be easy. You look around your peers and you're like, you know, if you do 10% better than your peers, that's probably impressive. If you're in the top 10% performers of your peers, it's like, but your peers, they might not be doing anything hard at all other than doing their 40-hour work week and complaining about that. So like, where is the aspiration here? And I'm not saying I'm perfect by any means, but I'm trying every day to set higher and higher, harder and harder goals, because not only is that where success comes from, that's where fulfillment comes from. You're going to get done with your life and you're like, look at all these hard things I did, right? It's hard to go travel to Europe. Go. It's hard to go to, you know what? You're like, I can't afford to go to Europe. I was like, okay, fine. Drive to Mexico, right? Drive to Argentina. You can go to a lot of places that are hard that will give you a fulfilling life experience. It's hard to build a company. It's hard to create art. It's hard to do a lot of these things. And you're not going to do it by accident. You have got to set goals and you got to set mountainous goals.
Now, let me push back on this a little bit. I mean, is there a place for purpose that isn't goal oriented, that's more process oriented? So often I look at my venture with podcasting and I love podcasting, but I realized that setting goals, especially goals that were maybe what you'd call radically responsible goals, really big goals, actually sometimes took away from the joy of doing it. And that I've found a lot more joy in the process of, for instance, making the podcast, and a lot less in the all long-term goal setting. I mean, is there a place for that?
Actually, yeah, you're right. I mean, goals should be process oriented. I don't want to have a successful podcaster. I want to be a podcaster. Hmm. Right? Brandon is great about this. He's like, goals should be identity based. I am a. Mm-hmm. People see me as this. Right. Rather than like, you know, I have, or I have done, right. I'm not like I've been to this amount of countries. It's like, no, I'm somebody who travels, right. I always have travel plans lined up.
We are talking to Alex Scott Fleece, who's the creative director for Brandon Turner's new podcast, A Better Life. And we are talking a thread he put out there about things, including radical responsibility and goal setting. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. This episode is brought to you by Range Rover Sport. Range Rover Sport leads by example. With a visceral, uncompromising, and dramatic feel, this car helps you rise to the occasion. How does it do that? Range Rover Sport has powerful on-road performance and commanding all-terrain capability by combining assertiveness with signature Range Rover refinement. This is the car that redefines sporting luxury. The new Range Rover Sport features advanced cabin technologies such as active noise cancellation and cabin air purification, purposeful cockpit-like driving position, and award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment is at the heart of the experience and provides intuitive control of the vehicle systems. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. Once again, explore and build your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. That's LandRoverUSA.com.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenues, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/earn. That is linkedin.com/EARN for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/earn and get started. We are talking to Alex Scott Feliz, who says that deadlifting solves all problems. He also says shit talk is his love language. And we are talking about a thread. I'm going to read the thread for you again. And this is verbatim. I've seen four posts this morning saying that if you want to improve your life, you have to give up sugar, alcohol, and similar things. While this is probably a good idea, sugar isn't your problem. What changes lives is radical responsibility, huge goals to shoot for, and monster intensity that lasts 10 years. There are millions of successful people who eat sugar and millions of people who eat clean but go nowhere in life. Don't let people sell you cheap solutions. Let's talk about this term monster intensity for 10 years. First and foremost, how did you come up with 10 years as opposed to 5 or 20 or what have you?
Yeah, arbitrary, mostly arbitrary. Most people can't do anything for 10 years, and that's why, right? I'm trying to juxtapose the, I can give up sugar. Like, how long do you have to give up sugar before it makes your life better? Is it every day? Is it just today? I didn't eat sugar today. Look how successful I am. So can you give up sugar for 10 years? Can you build a business for 10 years? Can you podcast for 10 years? You know the data on podcasting. How many people quit after 10 episodes? It's high.
Oh, yeah, like 75%.
How many people quit before 100 episodes? 99?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you can get to 10 years, like the data between 10 years and 5 years is probably just as radical, right? I said 10 years is mostly arbitrary, but 10 years is a big number. But also 10 years is like what it really takes. Like most companies don't make all the money that they're going to make in the first 5 years. You know, if you want to get in shape, it's like, you know, what's interesting is 10 years isn't really the number. Forever is the number. Forever is the number. You want to get in shape. You want to be somebody who's like in shape. It's a go to the gym. It's not a 5 year goal. It's a forever goal. You want to be a podcaster, Doc? Are you going to quit? Are you going to quit after you hit 10 years?
I don't think I'm going to quit ever.
Which is exactly my point. So if you can do something for 10 years, then you're probably somebody who does the thing as a part of their identity. And then you are a successful podcaster. I've said it before. I think I already said it in the show. I might not have, maybe we said it before you recorded. Like, you're probably the best podcaster I know personally in terms of your preparation, your ability to like curate a conversation. You're great. And it's not because you have some goal to be the best podcaster. It's because you have a goal to, you just like it. Your identity is a podcaster. And that makes you the best, and you'll continue to get better forever. And so I said 10 years. I didn't really mean 10 years. What I really meant was forever, but people are too afraid of 10 years. Never mind forever. They can't get to, and which is exactly why I think you asked, you're like, why not 5 years, Alex? Can we be reasonable here? And it's like, dude, the last thing you want to do with your actual life is set goals that are reasonable. That's the last thing you want to do. You want to be unreasonable. You want to shoot big.
I love this idea of 10 years only because you've heard the saying, and I don't even know if the numbers are right, but people say, you know, you could be surprised at how little you can accomplish in 1 year, but how much you can accomplish in 10 years. Just this idea of sticking with it gets you past the hump of naivete or whatever it is that keeps you from doing what you need to do. And that you just have to get past that point. And often that point is longer out than a year.
Yeah. I think it's called the Valley of Despair. It's when you're like, you do something for a little while, you start to get like, oh, this is fun. And then you're like, wait, I'm not that good at it. Maybe I'll just quit. And then you got to like grind through that. And then you get better. And then you find out that there's other people that are way better. And then you keep going. And then what else happens when you do something for 10 years is you get the waves of success that come from randomness. What happens when the economy goes down and people like flee from financial content because they get disillusioned, right? And they're not interested. Well, then the economy comes back And then everyone's going to come back and they're like, I want to make money. I'm starting to feel confident again. Who is the authority in the financial podcast industry? And there's like seven podcasts that have existed for 10 years because those are the seven that just didn't quit and they get all the market share. So time really matters. I mean, it's not a universal thing, right? It doesn't apply to everything equally, but you want to get, you know, like photography, you want to get good at photography. It's like, dude, do it for 10 years. Do it for life. There'll be swings up and down where I'm good, I'm bad. Trends come along and they're like, you know, what's really popular right now is, this is what I'm working on full time, is business owners, entrepreneurs, and people that are realizing that they have to create content to thrive, to succeed, to exist in the marketplace today. If you are an entrepreneur or business owner, you have to create content now. You have to. And there's not that many resources for people who do what I do, which is I try to get the camera out of your way so you can go from idea to like on the internet as quickly and easily as possible, looking good, sounding good, and getting and being, you know, like being a good personality. So like that's becoming popular. And that's what I've been working on, you know, accidentally for the last 5-10 years. So I'm capitalizing on what's a growing movement right now. So you have to do things for long term to get the real to get the real success. And 10 years is the first benchmark, let's say.
Yeah. And we're talking about compounding, right? If we want to put this as a financial podcast, although we talk about non-financial things all the time, but really what we're talking about is the financial term compounding, is that it takes a certain number of years to compound your skills and ability. And then when, again, you take in the kind of flows of being the right person at the right time, you're going to be the right person at the wrong time sometimes, but hopefully the right time will come about. We're talking about monster intensity for 10 years. We talked about the 10 years part. What is monster intensity? What does that look like in your life specifically?
Monster intensity is not a weakness of mine. It's sort of built into my personality. I'm tempted to think that most people have some intensity in them, you know, when they get around the right thing. I could be wrong. So maybe I'm just showing my bias here, but I'm intense about everything. And I think I look at success and, you know, that's wildly successful isn't intense, obsessed about what it is that they want to do. I don't think that you can be wildly successful and half-ass things or like do it casually, right? I mean, look at, you know, YouTube's one that I talk about often. It's like, you want to compete on YouTube at a high level? You can't do it once a week anymore. You got to find a way to make it, to really compete, you got to find a way to make it full-time, right? It's there's a lot of resources in there. You want to be an actor? You want to be a Marvel star? It's like, dude, not on the weekends. That's your life.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. How much do you work on this podcast? Right. You've been doing this now for a while, but I'm sure it's not an hour a week sort of thing.
No. It's 20 to 30 hours a week. And that probably doesn't even include a lot of the social media time that I don't even look at and think about. Right. When you're out there posting, interacting with people.
Ralph Waldo Emerson says a man is what he thinks about all day long. And so I question people. I'm like, what do you think about all day long? Are you thinking about distractions? Are you just bouncing around to the next, you know, dopamine hit? That's not monster intensity. Monster intensity is waking up and thinking about the thing you want to accomplish. When I was a meathead powerlifter for many years before I got into finance. And, you know, I got a video, I'll have to send it to you. I got a video of me deadlifting like 600 pounds once. And it's not because I just went to the gym 4 hours a week. It's because I woke up and I thought about the gym every day. And I was stretching the right way and I was eating. And I was like, okay, today's my rest day, but I still have to eat this. I still have to do these stretches. I still have to, you know, I have to rest. So I'm going to do less. And then tomorrow it's like, okay, I got deadlifts. I got it at this time of the day. So I'll stretch throughout the day. I'll drink this amount of water. It's the whole day. The whole day is geared around this thing that I want to accomplish. And so I think it's mental. It's not like, you know, I'm an intense guy by my physical nature. I'm intense. It doesn't have to be that, but it definitely has to be up here. It has to be in that brain. You got to be thinking about it. How am I going to accomplish this goal? How am I going to solve this problem? How am I going to get to where I'm going? If it's just a casual 1 hour a day, 4 hours a week, like you're just going to get out competed, bro.
You know, it's funny you say that, but I think about like, what is the thing you think about all the time? Like for me, it's either podcasting or book writing. Like, especially lately, it's been book writing. It's like, how am I going to write that next book? And it does take up a lot of my thought process. Like I'm thinking about that like every day. It's like, how am I prepping? Who am I talking to? What am I doing? And it's funny because I am at a point in life where certainly the intensity doesn't have to necessarily be there. Like I don't need to do it to make a living. I don't need to do it to put food on the table. But it just seems like a natural flow of intensity. I guess Can we ask that other question? Can intensity go too far? I mean, people do get upset, start feeling bad, especially when they're being exceedingly intense about a huge goal and they're not meeting it, right? Not everyone actually reaches their big audacious goals.
Yeah, I mean, I started off, I have a highly addictive personality. So in that regard, like, yeah, I mean, you can certainly be intense about the wrong things. So setting the productive goals is an art. It's a skill. It's important, right? But it's also easy to mess up. So you can be intense about things that are unproductive. And you can also set goals and be intense about things that just the universe just did not deem to be as valuable as you wish it was, right? You can have the most popular podcast about Dungeons and Dragons, and then, you know, it's Dungeons and Dragons. It's only going to go so far. Or what if you're the most successful, you know, podcaster about, you know, something that just, it goes away. We were, there's a lot of Bitcoin podcasts that probably went away when Bitcoin crashes. Yep. And it's like, it's just the stroke of the universe. You could have been the best at it, but Lady Fortuna, decides everybody's success in the end. And that's just the unfortunate game of life, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't play it, you know? So I'm of the opinion that you should tend to be more intense rather than less, because it's better to shoot and, you know, maybe correct along the way or, you know, do your favorite thing. And the world just said, hey, we just don't need that much of that thing, no matter how good you are at it. There's world class. I think there's a competition for Rubik's Cube, like solving, right? It's like, you're the best in the world at solving the Rubik Cube. It's like, unfortunately, it's just not that valuable. but is it, would I say to somebody like, hey, you shouldn't be intense about being the best at something? I mean, maybe if you're 40 and you're trying to win that competition, I would say, you know, probably go try something else. But no, I would say like, you're better off being too intense and doing the wrong goal rather than being lackadaisical about all goals.
Well, Alex, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show today. I mean, this conversation reminds me that if you're on social media or if you're listening to other people out there, there is a lot of cosplaying success. And I think that's exactly what your thread really, as you were talking about, is about. It's like, it's really easy to focus on these simple markers or monitors that supposedly have something to do with success. And so it's easy for us to focus on those because they're easy. But maybe really reaching our goals, whether they're financial or otherwise, really takes some radical responsibility and sticking to it for years and years and years. It's ultimately doing the thing, especially if it's that thing that consumes a lot of your thought process, which makes me again think of you, Alex Scott Felice. I know undoubtedly in 10 years, you'll probably still be talking shit, but what are some of your big goals that you're looking forward to in the future?
I want to create a platform that helps people that want to create content that know they should be creating content and they're getting in the way of maybe a little bit of motivation, maybe the discomfort of being on camera and the production of like cameras and posting all that stuff is getting in their way. I really want to help. I love entrepreneurship. I spend a lot of time in entrepreneurship. I speak the entrepreneurship language and I love content. I love making people look good on camera. I like making people sound good on camera. And I love sharing valuable stories. And so there's a lot of people in the world that have value, right? And they need to be sharing it with the world. They know that, but they're struggling to get the content out because, you know, it's awkward. It's uncomfortable. The production is hard and the production demand is going up. You got to sound better. You got to look better. And so I speak both those languages and I'm trying to, and the movement is coming. We're at the very beginning of it. This is going to be a revolution. So if you are on the fence, like I want to help those people get their content ideas and the value they have to share on camera, on the internet, in a way that looks equal to the value they provide. And they want to be able to help them do it easily and confidently.
And so if people are interested in learning more about you or learning more how to do this, what is the best way for them to keep up with you or get in touch with you?
Right now it's Instagram. I have a site being built, but it's like 3 days away from being completed. I don't know what the actual URL is going to be. The platform is going to be called Content Matters, but find me on Instagram.
And what are you at Alex Scott Felice on Instagram or what are you?
Yep. Alex Scott Felice.
All right. We've been talking radical responsibility and discussing social media, specifically a thread that Alex put out. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Dude, I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
That's a wrap. Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts. My talk with Alex Feliz made me think a lot about how I feel about goals. It may surprise you, I do not like goals. In fact, I often say that I am goal agnostic, not necessarily goal phobic, but goal agnostic. Here's the reason why. I think goals cause problems and actually detract from our sense of purpose and happiness. And I think it does this in three specific ways. Why are goals bad? Well, the first is they're failable. So often, especially when we create this really big, audacious goals, we're setting ourselves up for failure, and often then we don't actually enjoy the process of doing whatever we're doing, and it leaves a bad taste in our mouth. A good example is in writing my book, Taking Stock, I thought, I'm going to create a big, audacious goal. I want to sell 1,000,000 books. That's huge. I mean, 0.001% of authors sell 1,000,000 books. The likelihood was I was going to fail from the start, no matter how much work I did. By setting this goal up, I'm really setting myself up to not feel good when I don't get anywhere even close to that number. So goals that are failable often leave us feeling bad as opposed to feeling good. So that's the first reason. I also don't like goals because often when we set a goal, we don't know what we're going to do with that goal once we get there. So let's say with my book that I did sell 1,000,000 books, do you think I would be happy then? No, because once I reached my goal, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. And in fact, because of habituation and hedonic adaption, I probably would have very quickly gone back to my baseline of happiness. And then I'd start saying, well, how do I bring back that special feeling I had when I sold 1,000,000 books? And the only way would be to either write a new book and sell at least 1,000,000, if not more, of those, or start concentrating on selling 2,000,000 books. No matter what I did, I would keep moving the goals, and it wouldn't feel good any longer. So goals are bad for a few reasons. One is they're failable. Two, often when we get to the peak of the mountain, instead of being at the peak, we realize that we're just at the beginning of another valley and there are many, many more peaks ahead. And last but not least, I don't like goals because often when we reach our goals, we become petrified that we're going to lose everything we just gained. This is the concept of loss aversion. I see this a lot with money goals. Often when people get to the $1,000,000 or the $2,000,000 or whatever it is that they thought was their ultimate reason for saving money, instead of being excited, they fear they're going to lose what they have. The market is going to go down. They're going to have a health crisis and have to spend more than they thought they would. Whatever it is, they realize that the fear of losing what they have is actually doubly as bad as the fear of never getting there in the first place. So it was one thing to dream of $1,000,000 and not get there, but it was completely another to get there and be petrified that you're going to lose what you have. So there you have it. The three main reasons why I don't really set goals for myself anymore. For me, goals tend to be a little toxic. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have to have goals. The point is, you can't really lay your happiness on achieving that goal. So, for instance, with my podcast, I have a goal to get more downloads for more people to listen to it, but that's not what causes me happiness in podcasting. What causes me happiness in podcasting is having these amazing conversations or the kind of improvement that I can control. So I can study and become a better interviewer. That's something that's very much under my purview, but ultimately I only have so much control over how many new people find the show, decide they like it, and pass it on to family and friends. And so again, the way I'd say it is, I've turned out to be goal agnostic, not goal phobic. You can have goals, but your happiness shouldn't depend on those goals. And so the conversation with Alex Feliz is really interesting, trying to integrate his ideas of how we get ahead in the world, how we have radical responsibility, how we take care of the things we say we're going to take care of, and yet not let goals become toxic and ruin our joy in the moment, because ultimately we want to enjoy our day-to-day life. We don't want to always be trying to get to the next step, to get to the next place, to reach the next goal. If that's what your happiness depends on, unfortunately, I'm afraid, whether you mean to or not, you might often fall short. Awesome. As you know, I keep things running for a little while just to catch our chatting afterwards as an after show.
Yeah.
Besides the technical problems, it's a really fun conversation. I knew immediately that it would be. Just because you're the kind of guy I like having these conversations. And you know, a big part of that is you're willing to put something out there and leave, like you said, you're willing to do it in such a way that leaves very little gray so that we can then start arguing the gray, which actually ends up being the good conversation.
I love gray, but it doesn't sell well.
Well, and let's look at the positive side. It doesn't sell well, but honestly, good conversations come from the gray. All right. So if you truly want to be a good content creator that sparks amazing conversations that actually changes people's hearts and minds, the gray is kind of where you got to be at. But the way you get there is not by stating it such. The way you get there is as what you do is you put a strong theory out there, strong thesis, and then you get into the weeds with other people about what that means.
Yeah. I learned so much. It sounds so fucked up. I learned so much from Donald Trump.
Yeah, right? I know.
He's
and it
so
does
good.
Sound messed up, but I know exactly what you're saying.
He's so good at doing like, well, there's good people on both sides. And you're like, what the fuck? At the Nazi rally? No, there's not. And it's like, well, let's have a conversation about it. You know, let's have a debate. And or, you know, it's like he's just so good at dropping those bombs. And it's so, I mean, I don't want to be like him, but the internet does do sound bites. And whether you like it or not, if you want to succeed, you sort of have to play that game at least to grab the eyeballs. We are now in a full attention economy. Full attention economy, and people's it's a difference between, you know, people are willing to have nuanced gray conversations like you're saying, but that's not what grabs attention. And so if you want to win the attention economy, you have to do it in you know, three words or less. Lock her up.
Yeah.
Build a wall.
Yeah. And so you can't be bland. And I mean, not to get overly political, but I think that's where kind of the left keeps on screwing up is they get so enraged by the three word sentence that they don't use that as a chance to use nuance to undo some of the damage done by those three word sentences, so to speak.
Yeah, well, we can go deeper down that rabbit hole a little bit. The problem is they don't want to actually talk about nuance, because when you start to get into nuance, you start doing the things like the, you know, Matt Walsh did that documentary, What is a Woman? And you start like, it's a hard conversation.
Very hard conversations.
Yeah. And they don't, and I don't actually think that the left benefits from that conversation.
Interesting.
To be honest. Uh-huh. Yeah. Because then they have to say like, you know, are we for women's rights? Are we for trans women's rights? They aren't that conversation. I don't want to get down that rabbit hole too much. Like, but that rabbit hole is much harder. That discussion is much harder, and they don't have a good pathway. So the right has kind of, they're in a really interesting position where it's very simple. They have a very simple messaging and they have a very simple belief system. And so they kind of have it figured out, right or wrong. They have their way figured out. And so, the left is not done well with nuance because they don't want to have the nuance conversation, unfortunately.
And as you said, it's a difficult conversation and interesting.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next election cycle. I'm very excited for it. Election cycles on the internet are like my favorite time of the year because, all of a sudden people go from like, we were having friends. We were fine for 4 years to like,
I hate you.
This is what I think. It's this one thing. And if you have broken this moral crime, then you are my perfect enemy. And I never liked you ever once. And I just like watching it in action. It's so much fun for me.
Yeah. Crazy times. All right. I'm going to hit stop on this just for the end of it.
You care about your money. Of course you do. So why aren't you listening to SoFi Daily? This podcast will keep you updated on the latest news in the stock market and how it could impact your financial life. Stay on top of what's happening. Listen to SoFi Daily, wherever you get your podcasts. That's SoFi Daily, wherever you get your podcasts.
The corporate world is like the ocean. It's alluring, but it's also full of deadly creatures that can shred you to pieces.
It becomes kind of like a Game of Thrones political arena where everyone's trying to murder you to get your job.
My family doesn't come from corporate background, so I didn't have any sort of guidance in that.
This is not your typical work podcast.
Sometimes you need to be empathetic. And then there are times that you ask for input, but you don't really give a shit.
Listen to the Ambie Award-nominated podcast, Surfing Corporate.
Stretch opportunity. What is this, yoga class? Get out of here.